Here in Wisconsin, we rely very heavily on our groundwater. In fact, 95% of all communities in the state and nearly a million additional residents with private wells use groundwater for their everyday needs. We'll be talking about groundwater awareness and well testing today with Stephen Alice, Regional Drinking Water Supervisor with the South Central Region of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He's been with us in the past, with us for the first time, I believe, Kevin Masaryk, who's an outreach specialist at the UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education. Pleased to have both of them with us today. And if you have some water quality questions, water testing questions, I hope you'll join in today. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call, send us an email, we'll be glad to get you on. Steve, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And Kevin, welcome to you. Thank you for coming by as well.
Thank you for having me as well.
What's the overall quality of our water supply in Wisconsin?
I think our overall water quality is actually very good in Wisconsin. We clearly have some specific areas around the state with concerns, but generally in Wisconsin, we're known for good water quality, and our data testing bears that out. I think for the most part in Wisconsin, you can put a well in most places and get a water quality that's acceptable to home use.
So we're in pretty good shape, although we've got some problem areas, and that, of course, is one reason why we want to be testing our water, I assume, Kevin.
Certainly. We can identify areas where we know of specific groundwater quality problems, but every well is different, and it's important that every well owner tests their water on a regular basis for certain recommended tests.
And, Steve, there's a new website out that provides some useful information, I think.
Yeah, the Wisconsin DNR, a couple of months ago, we put out on our website a series of web pages called What's Wrong With My Water? And you can actually just go into Google and type what's wrong with my water, and this would be the first page that pops up.
Oh, cool.
And or you could go to the Wisconsin DNR website, and in the upper right-hand corner it says search the website. Again, type in the phrase what's wrong with my water. And what this was designed to do is allow people to sort of self-diagnose a problem so that when they call a pump installer or a well driller or talk to a water quality company, that they've sort of narrowed the problem, that they have an idea as to the problem with their well, likely solutions, and then they can confirm that by talking to a pump installer.
So that should be pretty useful for individuals or communities just in general, I would.
Yeah, it's been very popular so far, and we're actually getting some compliments from folks in other states on that website.
And Kevin, back to you for just a minute. I want to, the UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education, maybe you could fill us in. I should have asked you that right off the bat. What is that organ? What are you
sure.
all about there?
We're actually affiliated with UW Extension. And one of the primary responsibilities that I have is working with local communities to set up what we call community drinking water programs, where we work at a local level to organize a group testing. People submit samples from their individual private wells. We analyze those results. And I come back and I do educational programs, helping them understand the community groundwater supply and then interpret their individual results and what that means in terms of health, aesthetics, possible solutions to water quality problems.
That's pretty cool. So, and that's pretty much in the Stevens Point area, or in
we work statewide, all over the state. We work with any community that asks us to.
Yeah, and I want to compliment Kevin and his group because they do an excellent job of taking the water quality issue down to the well specific area.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with his work on a township basis, and the township boards have been very good, and the information that Kevin and his group put forward, I know, has generated some new wells that people, upon listening to Kevin getting sampling results, they'll evaluate their personal situation, say, this water this well we're drinking from is outdated, it's poor construction, it's time to replace it. And I know of a couple of situations where Kevin's work has led to that.
And certainly testing individually is great because it tells you about your individual water supply, which is important. But by testing as a group, we're able to identify more community or regional groundwater issues. And it really helps people understand that groundwater is a local resource, and what people do in their immediate area has an impact.
Sure, it's not. If your water's bad, your neighbor's water might be bad, too.
Sometimes that's the case.
Sometimes that's the case, yeah.
Well, we have callers online. You can join us, by the way, again with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Steve in Oregon, we'll go to you first. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. Hey, I live out in Oregon, out in the country, and I had a well installed on our property. I actually rent the property. My landlord had a well installed approximately 8 years ago, and I have a sinkhole that is developed right next to the well, and it was maybe 4 feet deep and 4 feet wide, and I was just wondering if you had any clue on what that might be from. I did have somebody from the DNR come out and look at it, and they said they had no idea what the deal was. Any suggestions or?
All right. Well, that's
Can I just fill that in, or should I?
I have a couple of ideas that might be. The first question I'll ask is there any indication of a leak there? And you may not see the leak, but have you noticed inside your house where the pressure tank is located? Next to the pressure tank is a switch, and you'll hear that switch kick on and off, and there's a gauge there. And if there's a leak in your system, you could be leaking water there, and that may be causing an erosion around that wellhead. So that'd be the quickest and easy thing to do is to go stand next to your pressure tank and see if it's kicking on and off when you know you don't have water running in the house.
Okay.
If that is occurring, then you may have a leak outside there, and you want to get that taken care of because your pump will burn out pretty quickly doing something like that. The second idea that could be coming into play here is it's possible that when that water line was run from the well into the house that it wasn't properly bedded, and you may have some differential shifting of a clay versus a sand right next to that wellhead because where the water line comes off, that water line may not be properly supported. So that's something that you can dig down and look at, or you may want to call a pump installer and have them come out and look at it. I mean, you could just fill it in, but without knowing what's going on, I talked to a colleague, and he had said that he's aware of at least a couple times in the southeast part of the state where they have a different type of soil than you have, but where that water line is actually broken because it was not put in a properly constructed trench.
Okay. We haven't noticed any difference in water pressure at all, or we checked the screens for any siltation. Is there any way the well itself is filling in? It's a 164-foot well. I think it was cased down to 100 feet. Could it be, and usually aren't the pumps up maybe 20 feet? Could that be filling in the bottom? And it just hasn't reached the pump yet? Is that an issue?
I doubt that's the issue because with 100 feet of casing in Oregon, you probably have a certain number of feet of casing into rock, so that well would be grouted. And that grout would have kept any of the surface material from traveling down the well casing. So I think a more likely scenario is that there's a leak there. And again, you can check that by going to the pressure tank and listening for that click. Because when a pressure tank switch kicks on or off, you'll hear it click, and then you'll see a gauge go up and down. But if you don't have a leak there, then I might guess that it's the bedding of when the water line was put in is just settled out.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Steve.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Yeah,
appreciate it. Let's go to Dave in Soldiers Grove next. Dave, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, with what Steve just said about the local nature of a well and, you know, advising to test your well to see what you have periodically, what is the import or the concern that somebody might have with a large animal confinement, you know, the large dairies that are coming into Wisconsin in different areas? What's the import of those next to your well, you know, for example, next to my well?
Sure.
How concerned should I be?
Sure. I would say that, you know, any time that you live next to agricultural fields or agricultural facilities, there's certain recommended tests that you'd want to consider, and the most important test that you'd want to do would be an annual coliform bacteria test and as well as a nitrate test. Those two would get at some of the potential contaminants that you'd expect from a large facility like that or any agricultural field where they may be applying manure or fertilizers or pesticides. The other one that I'd recommend Anytime you live next to cornfields or soybean fields would be a pesticide screen or pesticide analysis. Those go along with any agricultural contaminant sources. So anybody within a quarter mile of one of those facilities would want to consider those things.
Okay. Thank you, Dave, for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. So you mentioned kind of three different areas. How many different things can we, how many substances can we test for in a water test?
Pretty much as many as you want.
Steve. Yeah.
And that's why we really try to focus it on what is the most likely contaminant or issue to be found near a well. You know, there are many categories of tests. You can run metals tests. You can run pesticide tests. You can run volatile organic compounds, synthetic organic compounds. But for most private well situations, there's not a reason to run that myriad of tests. You know, the test that Kevin just recommended, a bacteria test, nitrate test, herbicide scan, I think for the most part, you could get those done for less than $100. You know, certainly the bacteria and nitrate, those two together are probably going to be at $50 or less. And
so it's pretty reasonable given what...
pretty reasonable, particularly given the importance of the information they're giving you.
Absolutely. Well, Zach in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Zach, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a good question before regarding what might be applied to water, you know, from man-made sources that could contaminate a well. But I was wondering if Mr. Masaryk might have any insight as to what occurs naturally in the ground that might pose some problems for an individual well owner. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Well, Kevin, we'll turn to you for that.
Sure. A lot of people are worried about the human influence contaminants, but we also must realize that there are naturally occurring contaminants in our soils and our bedrock. And the one I'd mention that's probably most critical in Wisconsin would be arsenic, naturally occurring arsenic in the bedrock and the soils. And it's currently recommended that every well in Wisconsin test at least once for arsenic. If those levels are elevated, then there's recommendations that those wells be tested annually to see if levels have changed. Other naturally occurring contaminants that might be considered would be things like manganese, which are showing up in water supplies. Typically, areas where you have high levels of iron in the water might be an area where you also have some high levels of manganese. Those two are the main naturally occurring contaminants that we see.
I was watching television this morning, and I think it was out in the Dakotas where they've got terrible flooding. And, of course, we had terrible flooding last year here in Wisconsin. I imagine that must have had some effect, Steve, on wells, wouldn't it?
It really did. We were putting out a message, I think pretty much all the water. First, certainly the DNR and many other agencies were putting out a message last summer that if your well was overtopped with floodwaters, don't drink it. You know,
yeah.
Do not drink it. Assume it's contaminated. Get it tested. We were even putting that message out if your well is surrounded by floodwaters, because a lot of the wells in the state may be older, may not have modern construction methods. So even floodwater surrounding a well can lead to a concern. Particularly, though, an overtopped well is that most people don't realize that on a well cap, there are actually some vents. A well needs to breathe.
Yeah.
So when that water gets overtopped, or the water overtops the well, you've got the ability for water to enter the well. One consequence that we did see in our DNR data from public water systems as a result of last summer's flooding is we did see an increase in the number of unsafe samples that were reported, both in private and public. And then we've also seen an increase in nitrate levels in certain areas. And while we don't know, we're sort of speculating that may be to the heavy influx of rain in June and July of last year.
Yeah. So is there hope for a lot of those wells? Can they be eventually saved or
Yeah, if a well has been contaminated with bacterial-type stuff, which is a big thing we're worried about, they can be treated usually with chlorine. A homeowner can do this, although if it's in a situation where something was flooded, we'd probably recommend they hire a professional to do it because a professional may choose to pull the pump and add chlorine, a little bit different technique than a private well in an average homeowner would do it.
Oh.
But yeah, you can treat a well with chlorine. That'll kill the bacteria.
Talking today about our groundwater and testing our groundwater with Steve Alice, Regional Drinking Water Supervisor with the South Central Region of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kevin Masaryk, Outreach Specialist at the UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Steve Alice of the DNR, Kevin Masaryk of UW-Stevens Point, our guest today as we talk groundwater awareness and well testing with them. Well, lots of callers online, so we'll go back to the phones. And Bill in Bayfield County up next. Bill, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if the well driller's logs were available for the public, such as online.
I don't know that the well construction reports are online. The Department of Natural Resources hasn't put them online. Do you have a specific private well, I assume your own well, you're interested in trying to find the construction report on?
Well, and I'm just interested in what the depth of water is and things like that in my neighbors and the surrounding wells.
Yeah. To the DNR doesn't have that online for private wells. You can look at some of our public systems, and you might get a depth of water when the well was drilled. You can go to the DNR's website and do a search on public water systems. But your best bet actually to find that information might be to look at some of the Wisconsin Geological Natural History Survey. They do county circulars or county informational bulletins. Mm. And when they do that, many times they'll include depth of water, bedrock type, soil type, that type of thing.
Also, well construction reports, anytime a well is drilled in the state of Wisconsin, it's required to have a well construction report filled out for it. And if you don't know your well construction, you can request a copy of that report from the Wisconsin Geological Natural History Survey. There's a small fee to do that. But if they can find your well construction report, it's a good piece of information to have, and it'll contain the information that you're looking for: depth to water, depth of casing, the depth of the well, the types of materials that the well is drilled into. Pretty useful information to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Sturgeon Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've got a interesting little sidelight, because in 1978, I had a deep well put in. I'm in Door County. And we had to go down 640 feet to get water from the St. Peter Sandstone. So there's no water from Door County going into the well. And it was cased 175 feet and capped, and everything was fine and dandy, and it was tested. And then a few years ago, I had a couple of well agreements with a couple of neighbors, and they put in lines over to my well, and then we had some local testing of water, and I signed up for that, and it came back bacterial infection in the well, contamination. And what had happened is that my well was put in before earwigs in Door County, and so it did not have a insect-proof cap on it. And so I got a hold of the well driller, and he put a cap on that excluded the earwigs, and I used bleach and pool shock and tested it again, and everything was fine. But for people who've had their wells in before earwigs in an area, you might find that the bacteria is infecting your well, because those little devils will find a way to get into your well.
Well, that's interesting. Kevin, do you want to comment on that? Thanks a lot, Bill, for calling, by the way.
No, thanks for the call. It's a good lesson for a lot of homeowners that may have had older wells installed that don't have what we call vermin-proof caps. You can imagine that if there's a space in that well, if that cap is loose or missing, little critters like earwigs or spiders, especially during the fall of the year when the temperature starts to drop, they're going to try and get in that warm environment in any way they can. Vermin-proof caps are kind of a modern-style cap that allows the well to function properly but keeps those things out.
Yeah. And it also highlights a point of, is too often the case, somebody will put in a well and forget about it. And that's a good example of needing to upgrade a well with better technology by putting on a vermin-proof cap.
And those can't be all that expensive.
No, I think you can get most vermin-proof caps for less than $100.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it very much. Phyllis in Kenosha County up next. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
My call is related to radon in the water.
Okay.
I understand that recently Illinois put in a law requiring testing in real estate sales. And I happen to have a neighbor here in Kenosha County who had an Illinois buyer and had my neighbor run the radon test. Is this something that is going to be implemented in Wisconsin as well?
Well, I guess I'll start. Are you sure the test was radon or was it radium?
Radon.
Radon in water. Okay.
Actually, radon in air.
Yeah, okay. That sounds more like it. I don't know much about the real estate laws, so I don't really want to comment on that. Radon gas, if you go to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services website, you can learn a lot about radon gas and what the levels are acceptable in homes and in basements. They also have some information on radon removal. So I don't have any information that there's a new requirement that would be part of a real estate sale. But generally, below graded parts of houses, the possibility is there that radon can accumulate. So I would check the Department of Health Services website for radon gas.
All right. Thank you
I did check the DNR site.
Yeah.
And it does show that the southeast corner of Wisconsin does have a high radon.
Okay, so you said there was some on the DNR site also, but I know the DHS, Department of Health Services website, has probably more information than the DNR site.
All right. Thank you very much, Phyllis, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Kurt in Burlington next. Kurt, hi to you.
Hi. Oh, I was calling to find out, we have a well, but we also have a city sewer service.
Okay.
And we have a sinkhole that is developed from the neighbor's yard in a sinkhole, a small 4x4 one, to two in our front yard, about 30 feet apart, definitely going in a straight line path. But it's sort of following, I think, the street line of the city sewer. It's about 25 feet in front of our well.
Hmm. Kevin, you want to comment?
I'm going to hand that one over to Steve.
All right, Steve, we'll go to you.
I guess the first thing I would do is talk to your local governing authority, whether it be the township, or you say, are you in the city of Burlington or just on the outside?
Outside.
Yeah, so I'd talk to your township, and then I'd also talk to the sewer authority and make sure that what has occurred is that sewer line hasn't broken and things are draining into the sewer line. That what you may have, particularly as you describe a linear structure, the first thing that came to mind is that sewer line was put in. It may be collapsing and the soil above the sewer line may be draining into the line. So that would probably be the first place that I would start.
Okay.
All right.
Something you definitely want to look into, though.
All right.
Yeah, don't waste any time looking into that one. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Had an email from Sharon who says, our well water contains a high level of copper, high enough to stain plumbing fixtures. We live in Verona area. Is this common for this area of Dane County? Could this be caused by leaching from copper pipes due to acidity or alkalinity of groundwater? Any companies who would analyze for copper level, and what would your advice be on how to deal with this?
Sure. That's copper is a common issue for any home that has copper pipes. There's not really high copper levels in the groundwater itself. So when we have that staining on fixtures, when we have high copper levels, when we do water tests, the general source is going to be the copper plumbing itself. Water's likes to dissolve things. Water that comes in contact with the copper piping can dissolve sometimes unsafe levels of copper. And there are tests that people can do to determine safe copper levels. And if she contacted any local water testing laboratory, my guess is they'd be able to help her out with that.
Yeah, but it's something she should check.
I think it's something she should check, particularly if she's getting staining, to make sure that there's not a pH-related problem. If she's part of the Verona Water District, water yeah. utility, start with them. But if she's on a private well near Verona, then like Kevin said, working through going to the What's Wrong With My Water website as well as contacting a local yeah. water treatment company.
Yeah, let's, that website would be helpful.
Yes.
And Caleb in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Caleb.
Hey. I have a question about protecting public or private wells. A lot of I live in, you know, kind of a farming area, and a lot of wells that I know, you know, just private wells on people's farms are coming up with elevated levels of nitrates or bacteria levels. And I'm just wondering about, it just doesn't seem right that private farmers can, you know, be using these fertilizers in ways that are contaminating, you know, private people's wells. And is there, I'm just wondering about accountability for that, and is there legislation out there to protect people's you know, resources? Is it really a mm-hmm. it's a public commodity that is being denigrated by private industry?
All right, we'll start with Kevin.
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. Any time you apply nutrients like nitrogen to the soil, there's a potential for some of that to leach out the bottom. Plants, unfortunately, aren't 100% efficient at taking that nutrient up, so it's inevitable that some's going to leach into the groundwater. That being said, there is things that farmers should be doing. Nutrient management is one of them, to ensure that they're not applying more nutrients than the crop really needs. That's one possible solution or recommendation that I'd have. But unfortunately, there's certain soils that are just more susceptible than others, where it's really difficult to keep those levels down sometimes.
And I could see in the area near Viroqua, my knowledge of the geology in that area, you may have limited soils, particularly limited depth or thickness of soils, particularly if you're on a ridgetop. You know, you may only have 2 to 10, 12 feet of soil, and then you're getting to rock. And as Kevin just pointed out, you know, a nutrient can be applied, and if there's not enough soil to hold it in place, or you get a heavy rain, that type of thing, so they can all affect that. I think, though, it leads to the bigger question that we're both emphasizing is to people to regularly test their water so that they know what the quality is coming out of their well. Like we said at the beginning of the show, testing on an annual basis, or any time there's a change in the aesthetic of the water, get a change in the odor or the smell, the taste, those are the times to start having your water tested.
Right. But is it my question more related, though, what is there any recourse for? I mean there are areas, you know, high, you know, corn growing areas, for instance, in Iowa or in northern Illinois, where I mean the water is all contaminated by nitrates. And so what do people do, and how do we protect this resource, and what's being done about that?
For nitrate, there's very little that is able to be done. But for other things that go along with nitrate, one of the reasons we recommend nitrate tests so often is because it's a good indicator of other possible contaminants. If you think about the sources, if it's fertilizer source, then you might also think that pesticides might be an issue. And there are potential recourses for areas where pesticides have contaminated the groundwater. Wisconsin has what we call atrazine prohibition areas, and those are a direct result of people testing their water and finding levels of atrazine above recommended drinking water, safe drinking water standards. And when those instances are found, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection will institute an atrazine prohibition area where those chemicals are no longer able to be applied. We don't have the same recourse for nitrate, which is why our tool really is the educational component. Unfortunately, it takes a long time sometimes for that message to get across.
I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, and we'll move on and take some other callers as well. It is an issue that I don't know if we'll see legislation. You think we'll ever see legislation on the nitrate issue?
Gosh, that's a tough one. The other thing I want to mention, too, in terms of, you know, potential ways to reduce nitrate leaching to groundwater, the crop type also is important. And farmers looking to reduce nitrogen inputs or nitrate leaching might consider heavier rotation. So instead of growing corn on top of corn on top of corn, maybe do a corn-soybean. Soybean is a crop that uses less nitrogen. The less nitrogen you apply, the less nitrate that's going to leach into groundwater.
Yeah. Soybeans fix nitrogen, don't they? Or is that just alpha? I think they do.
They do some nitrogen. They're a legume.
Damien and Viroqua, we're on to you now. Hi, Damien.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
They're looking at building a large CAFO, I think 3,000 animal farm in our county. And I'm just wondering about possible water pollution issues that may come with that. And I'll just take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In order to construct a CAFO, stands for confined animal feeding operation, and in order to construct that, they'll need various permits, some of which do come from the Department of Natural Resources. And one of the things that we do look at is the ability of that facility to store and properly handle its manure. So unless there's an accidental spill, the storage of that manure shouldn't be an issue at that type of feeding operation. I think most of these larger facilities then, as part of it, and you're getting out of my area of expertise, but they also have a plan, have to have a plan to address where the manure is going to be spread, if they're going to use it that way, if they're going to, there are, I guess, a couple of facilities now in the state that are putting in basically small reactors, methane reactors, are using the manure as that food, as that source to generate a methane. But the animal feeding operations, the large confined facilities, they do have a set of regulations they have to meet for storage of the manure, and then have to have a plan in terms of being able to get rid of or dispose of the manure.
All right. Thank you very much for calling and for that question. Appreciate it, Damien. And Patty, we'll turn to you next in Fox Valley. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering about the pharmaceutical disposable aspect of things leaching into the groundwater from people disposing of that into their septic systems, and how that can impact groundwater, and if there's anything done in the testing mode that would look at that, or how is that monitored?
Yeah, pharmaceuticals are a relatively emerging contaminant for us. Our testing capabilities in the past haven't been able to detect the small levels that we typically find in groundwater. So it's very difficult to actually get a test for that. Any test that you could get would be pretty expensive or cost prohibitive. Anytime that you're going to dispose of pharmaceuticals, you do not want to dump them down the toilet and flush them down into your septic system. You want to avoid that if at all possible. Pharmaceutical collection programs are becoming more and more popular around the state. It works like a clean sweep program in your county where there's a specific drop-off point for unused pharmaceuticals. That being said, I think another issue that is a concern would be just the excretion of pharmaceuticals through your overall body system. Even if you're not dumping pills down the system to begin with, you're taking in those pharmaceuticals, and not all of it is being taken in by your body. A certain amount is going to be excreted out. And that's a larger question, I think, that we don't quite know the answer to either, is how much of that is passing through the system, ending up not only in our groundwater, but our surface waters as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to John in Ithaca next. John, hello to you.
Hello. I wanted to ask a question about something I saw last June during the floods that people who believe me cannot explain how it happened, so I'm going to ask you. I live in southwestern Wisconsin, out in the country, so there was no water lines or anything like that out here. And we had an awful lot of rain, but out in a field that's now no longer growing crops, it's been turned into sort of a wetland, there was a water spout that came straight out of the ground, at least 100 feet high, and I just can't imagine there would be that much pressure to make something go that high. Have you ever seen of anything like that?
100 feet would be a bit much. I think that you're in southwest Wisconsin. What county?
Faithful.
I'm sorry, what county are you in?
I'm in Richland County.
Richland County.
Ithaca.
Yeah, and was this towards a river valley or towards the base of the hill?
It was towards the base of the hill, and it's near Willow Creek.
Right, and I suspect that what may be occurring is that there was a lot of water on that hillside above it. That part of Richland County, the uppermost rock is a dolomite rock. It can have fractures and crevices in it.
Uh-huh.
And I suspect that at some point up on the hillside, water was funneling into a small area, working its way through the fractures and cracks in the rocks. And what you saw was just the outlet point of that water. And if it was that first weekend in June 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or whenever those storms hit, I mean, parts of Richland County, you guys had, what, like 8-9 inches over 2 days?
Oh, more than that, I think.
You know, and I think that what you may have seen is just that water concentrating someplace, some distance away from where you saw it, but that point at which you saw it was essentially the outlet.
It must have been a lot of pressure to me.
By chance, did you get any pictures of it?
No, there was only one other man that stopped to look at it, and of course, I didn't have a camera with me, but it was, you know, it looked like Old Faithful. It was just wild looking.
Wow. That's my best guess. I don't know if Kevin's got any other guess.
I'd agree with Steve, something like that, which you're probably not going to see it ever again in your lifetime, so so remember that.
Someone wondered if charcoal filters will remove pesticides from well water.
That's a good question. Treatment, oftentimes, water treatment can be very effective for many contaminants, but treatment is also very specific to certain contaminants. And activated charcoal or carbon filters, if you get a good one, chances are pretty good that it would remove most pesticides. There's certain ones that it might not handle as effectively, but that is one of the recommended treatment methods for pesticide contamination. If you go to the What's Wrong With My Water webpage, there's also links. If you're considering water treatment, there's a lot of great links on there for other contaminants like nitrate, arsenic, things that might also be health concerns.
And let's go back to that website once more, just as we conclude here today. Tell us again.
Sure. The phrase is What's Wrong With My Water. That's the title of the web pages. And by typing into Google that phrase, What's Wrong With My Water, but there are a series of pages that the DNR created, DNR Drinking Water and Groundwater Program, created to help people self-diagnose problems with their water supply.
So it's What's Wrong With My Water. Type that in and it'll pop right up.
That's right.
Well, guys, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, Steve, for coming back. Kevin, good to see you for the first time. I hope we can do this again.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Steve Allis is a regional drinking water supervisor with the South Central Region of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kevin Masaryk is outreach specialist at UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education. And sorry, we didn't... Lots of emails we didn't get to and some phone calls as well. But that is the way it usually works. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at community-supported agriculture. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.